bin ein Bialina.
I have a dream.
Carry on, London.
Quote, unquote. We present another edition of the game based on well-known sayings and some which haven't been said yet. It's devised and introduced by Nigel Rees.
Hello again. According to the American writer Henry Cuyler Bunner,
Shakespeare was a dramatist of note who lived by writing things to quote.
But whether we'll be quoting Shakespeare this week is something our panel will have to work out. We welcome back John Wells and Ned Sherrin, and for the first time we welcome the romantic novelist Roberta Lee and one third of the goodies, Graham Garden. And to read the quotations for us, as usual, is Ronald Fletcher. So can we have the first one, please, which is for Graham Garden?
Do you believe in fairies? If you believe, clap your hands.
I'm so glad, Graham.
That was said by Barry.
Barry who?
Humphreys.
No.
Cryer.
Very likely. No, J.M. Barry.
Yes.
Jim Barry.
And where did he say this?
It's in Peter Pan.
Act 4,
it's
yes.
It's either Peter... I think Peter Pan says it, because Tinkerbell is in dire straits.
And
Peter Pan has to enlist the help of the audience. It's a suspension of disbelief, a sort of Brechtian motif.
Perhaps ask our audience, do you believe in fairies?
Yes.
Tinkerbell lives. How wonderful.
All right, Ned Sherrin, I want you to listen to a scratchy... Thank you, Tinkerbell. I want you to listen to a scratchy old recording on which you'll hear the voice of an old man. What was he about to do?
Morning, gentlemen. Glad to see you all. Very light program this morning. Please play this tune as though you've never heard it before.
At the end, he said, I want you to play this tune as though you've never heard it before.
Is it Goodbye, Mr. Chips?
No, is the short answer. I'll offer it to the others. Roberta Lee?
It was Yehudi Menuhin talking to Stefan Grappelli.
Recorded on a foggy night in Manchester.
He would have said just as you always played it.
I'll offer it to anybody else.
Edward Elgar.
Edward Elgar. Yes. All right, John, you get the 2 marks for that. It was Sir Edward Elgar about to conduct the London Symphony Orchestra playing Land of Hope and Glory, and here's what it sounded like.
They were a fantastic group. I just think it's very sad they broke up.
It's a wonderful sound, isn't it?
Yeah, no wonder Edward Elgar said, please play this tune as though you've never heard it before. Roberta Lee, who said this?
Every woman should marry and no man.
My husband.
I'll offer it to the others. It was, in fact, Benjamin Disraeli who said it in his novel Lothair. John Wells, who said this?
I am not a crook.
Dr. Savundra.
Perhaps he did, but somebody... Ned Sherrin.
Richard Milhouse.
Yes, Richard Milhouse Nixon said it in late 1973, so Ned, you gather yourself 2 more marks. Graham Garden also wants to speak.
In fact, what he said was, I am not a crook.
Expletive deleted. And continuing with this mixed bag of quotations, we go back, in fact, to you, Graham Garden.
It was at Rome on the 15th of October, 1764... as I sat musing amid the ruins of the capital, while the barefoot friars were singing Vespers in the Temple of Jupiter, that the idea first started to my mind.
That was Stanley Gibbons.
Yes, you're obviously getting around to saying that it's Edward Gibbon, from his autobiography, relating how he conceived the idea of writing The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. Ned Sherrin, a moment ago you heard Sir Edward Elgar about to conduct. Now, who is this?
Well, I've always laid it down as a golden rule. There are only 2 things requisite.
So far as the public is concerned, for a good performance. That is for the orchestra to begin together and end together. In between, it doesn't matter much.
Well, it's plainly a night, isn't it?
Yes.
It's more likely to be Thomas Beecham, isn't it?
Indeed it was, Sir Thomas Beecham. If you heard a funny noise in the background, in fact it was rain pittering on the roof of the recording studio, and they'd have to stop the recording until the rain shower went away, so he just chatted. And this was subsequently put out on a gramophone record. Roberta Lee. Oh,
I thought that was Leonard Bernstein trying to get in, saying, it should have been me.
Roberta Lee.
He moves his lips along the curve of her throat to the shadow between her breasts. She put her hand... oh, yes.
Enjoy.
She put her hand to his head and pressed his lips more firmly against her skin. I hope I'll be able to satisfy you. Never. Never? She echoed. Of course not, my darling. He raised his head to look deep into her eyes. Like Oliver Twist, I'll always come back for more.
I think a brilliant performance by Sir Laurence Olivier there. Who said that?
Sounds like me, actually.
All right, I won't give you any marks for that, but can you tell me which of your many hundreds of books it comes from?
Not a clue.
You don't know?
Well, no, I've written 101 books.
All right,
I think I'll
deduct about 2 marks, because you don't know. In fact, it's from a book of yours called Man in a Million, which I've read right through to the end, because those, in fact, are the last words of it. John Wells, who said to the Pope,
I expect you know my friend Evelyn Waugh, who, like you, Your Holiness, is a Roman Catholic.
I think it was the humorist and fallabout comedian Randolph Churchill.
Yes, it was indeed. I wonder how you knew that.
I remember they were for some reason or other, they were in a tent in Yugoslavia together during the war.
Who were?
The Pope and actress.
At the end of that round, I might tell you that you're all tying more or less equal, and that we move on to some famous first words, not what people said the moment they were born, because only St. Nicholas seems to have been capable of doing that, but what they said in connection with some other kind of firsts. Graham Garden.
Mr. Watson, come here. I want to see you.
Mr. Watson, I was in medical student days. It could have been Sherlock Holmes.
It wasn't Sherlock Holmes' first words, no. Offer it to the others? Obviously you don't know, and I'll have to tell you. It was in fact said, they were the first words spoken over the telephone by Alexander Graham Bell in March 1876. Oh. And now some more first words for you, Ned Sherrin.
Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet. Wait a minute, I tell you. You ain't heard nothing. You want to hear tricky? All right, hold on.
You didn't think it sounded like that.
It must be Larry Parks, wasn't it? Or Al Jolson, as he then was, in The Jazz Singer.
Yes, it was actually Al Jolson. The Jazz Singer was the first commercially successful talking picture. There had been others
before. I expect so, yes.
Yeah, and released in October 1927. Roberta Lee, some more first words also from the cinema.
Water? Do I need it? I've had to shoot my horse.
Well. I haven't absolutely not a clue.
I'll offer it to the others. John Wells.
It was after the Trooping of the Colour, and it was said by Her Majesty the Queen.
Your destination wasn't very accurate.
Does anybody know? In fact, these were the first words uttered on screen by Clark Gable in a B Western, which I'm sure you've seen, called The Painted Desert. Clark Gable, of course, the man who, after his first screen test, got a rejection slip saying, ears too big. Right, here's the one aimed at you, John
Wells.
And
then he went on to play Noddy.
or Mr. Spock, yes. Moving on to you and the one aimed at you, John Wells.
As I was saying when I was interrupted,
it was the famous columnist of the Daily Mirror, Cassandra, who had been called up in 1939 to go to the war, and as he struck the typewriter with his fingers, as the piece opened, I mean P-E-A-C-E, he said, as I was saying when I was so rudely interrupted, referring to the wicked, fascist, jackbooted dictator, Albert Einstein. Or was it Hitler? I always forget his name.
Yes, in fact, this was William Connor, Cassandra, of the Daily Mirror, resuming his column after the war, as you absolutely rightly say. Sometimes when you give these interesting stories, John, people, I think, wonder perhaps whether you're telling the truth, but in fact you were, and you get two marks for that. And from actual first words, we turn to first words that aren't recorded, as far as we know. They're all first words said between famous couples and pairs. First, when they met for the first time, what did Gilbert and Sullivan say to each other?
Well, I have the advantage, in fact, of having read Carol Brahms' excellent book on the subject, and it was Gilbert who spoke, and he said, "I maintain that if a composer has a musical theme to express, he can express it as perfectly upon a simple tetrachord of Mercury, in which, as I need not tell you, there are no diatonic intervals at all, as upon the more complicated disdiapason with four tetrachords and one undernote, which embraces its perfect consonants, all the simple double and inverted chords." And Sullivan said, "Say that again."
Ah, yes.
I think...
But we did ask you to invent.
You probably want a frivolous and not a scholarly answer, I think he probably said you and I could make sweet music together.
Graham, do you have any ideas?
Well, in fact, what is even less known is that they met in somewhat reduced circumstances. Sir William Schrenck Gilbert and Sir Arthur Peabody Sullivan were at the time in Portobello Road, I think. Sir Arthur had a costermonger's barrow, and W.S. Gilbert was selling lace table mats. And they got together and sold the lace mats off the barrow, and that was the beginning of the doily cut.
Thank you, Graham. Well, another first encounter now, which somebody else had a go at, but what was really said when Romeo and Juliet met for the first time?
Radio 4 Playhouse, Drama Workshop, Part 4. What in fact happened was that in Verona, where it all took place, the Montagues had a thriving business collecting clover, much in the way that the dreaded samphire gatherer in Lear was well known for gathering dreaded samphire, I suppose. And they sold this clover, which was very popular with the ladies. And Romeo, the young sprig, was a door-to-door clover salesman. And he had a card printed saying Romeo and the name of the firm, the Verona Clover Company. Knocked on the door, Juliet opened it. He introduced himself, and she hit him, pow, right across the face. He said, "Hey," because he's Italian, you see. He said, "What's the matter for you? Why are you hitting me across the face?" And she said, well, she wasn't quite as Italian as he was. She said, "I'm sorry now, I've read your card, I see the mistake, but when a strange man stands on the doorstep and says, Romeo, Verona, Clover, I... I misunderstood."
Any other offers?
Yes, actually, what Romeo actually said was, "Don't do it, I read the script."
Yes. Now move on to another very romantic first encounter between Tarzan and Jane. Any ideas there?
Oh, yes, Roberta. I have for that. Well, Tarzan and Jane, as we know from the many films in which we've seen them, hailed from the deep south. And Tarzan said, "I'm the king of the jungle." And Jane said, "That means you're a lion." And he said, "No, ma'am, but I might be exaggerating a little."
And what were the first words when Charles Rolls and Henry Royce bumped into each other?
Well, Rolls was known... his real name, actually, was Sir Henry Weems Smythe, Bart, and he was just called Rolls because he was very fat. And Royce, whose actual name was Lord Dulverton, was called Royce because he had a rice like that. And he came up to Rose, Fatty, who was sitting playing the piano, and said,
"I have just invented a dashboard clock which is the loudest of its kind in the world."
No answer to that. Thank you very much. And let's move on now to some quotations which are embedded in music, and I'd like you to extract them from bed. As it happens, three of them have something to do with titles, as you'll see. First, Graham Garden. Included in this piece of music, there is a quotation. Can you spot it and tell me where it comes from?
So tender is the night, there's no one in the world except the two of us.
No one in the world except the two of us.
going right to the nub of it, yes.
Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, that's it, yes. Right, Tender as the Night.
Yes, now where did that come from?
That was a title by Scott Fitzgerald.
Yes, now where did he pinch it?
He pinched it, in his turn, from... Tender as the Night. She's bound to see you right.
It comes from the Ode to a Nightingale by Keats. Yeah. Ned Sherrin, there's another quotation in this song, sung by Groucho Marx, but used as the title of a film starring someone else.
Go west, young man. Go where the air puts hair in the chest, young man. You can ride a bucking bronco or a pony. You can cut a calf in half and make bologna. Go west, young man. Go right up there and give them the very best you can. Don't go east, don't go south, don't go north, have a care. Don't go up, don't go down, don't go here, don't go there. If it's true what they say about Dixie. Go west, young man.
It's a quotation from an American journalist in the mid 19th century who had a name like Horace H. Greeley or something.
Well, Horace Greeley is good enough, yes. Uh-huh. He said, go west, young man, and grow up with the country, and that phrase, go west, young man, was also used as the title of a film by Mae West. Roberta Lee, this next one has been sent in by a listener, Mr. Klaus Tobias of Wimbledon. Is Mr. Klaus Tobias here, by any chance? You are. Right.
Your car is on fire.
I suppose there's a sort of quotation trying to get out here. It's from a musical, which is so well known that I'm going to play it to you in Hungarian.
Len, délen, édes, éjjel, éden, remélsz.
Len, délen, édes, éjjel, éden, remélsz.
Csak nem.
Len, délen, édes, ilyen, ident, remélsz.
Mondja még egyszer.
Now, what could that possibly be?
John Wells when he's sober.
What could that be? My lawyers would be with you in the morning. The three of us will sing it together.
Yes, can the three gentlemen on the panel sing it
all right,
for me in English?
One, two, three. Boom. So,
in Spain's there's mine, in that lane.
You're absolutely
right. I think
right.
She's got it.
And I think we'll give you all four, 2 marks for that. This is the Hungarian equivalent of The Rain in Spain Falls Mainly on the Plain, and the translation I've been given is Down in the South in the Sweet Sky, which comes from the Hungarian My Fair Lady. Listen.
Len, délen, édes, éjjel, éden, remélsz.
Helyes a beszéd, helyes a beszéd.
Len, délen, édes, éjjel, éden, remélsz.
Remekül beszél, remekül beszél. Kérek egy hét, egy széles hét.
Mese szép, mese szép.
Len, megkerésed ég.
Ég, 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 ég.
Len, délen, édes, éjjel, éden, remélsz.
I didn't know Rex and Julie could speak Hungarian.
It wasn't, and I won't begin to try and pronounce the names of the performers. John Wells, finally, I think you'll know this song, but who claimed to have used it as the title of his autobiography?
I plan each charted course, each careful step along the byway. More, much more than this, I did it my way.
Well, it's of course the very wonderful from the operetta "Igrojni Liv Kurt," translated into English by Frank Sinatra and his Savoy Orpheans. I did it my way, and it is claimed to have been used as an autobiography by Dr. Crippin.
Who did it his way? Ned Sheeran leaps in.
It's Lord George, the Right Honourable Lord George Brown.
Yes, yes, of George Brown in the county of George Brown.
Belper.
He says in the introduction of the book, I took my title from the Frank Sinatra song, but then, in fact, the title of his book is In My Way, which I think puts a completely different complexion on it.
And you know who's always getting in my way? Harold.
It's time once again for some more personal remarks. Sharp things said by one person about another. So, Graham Garden, about whom was it said?
If ever he went to school without any boots, it was because he was too big for them.
I think probably the man with the most unnoticeable feet in the country, actually.
Really?
Certainly, I've never noticed them.
Ah. Richard Baker.
You mean he has them? Offer it to the others. John Wells?
Harold Wilson was the bootless one.
Yes. It was said by Ivor Boomer Thomas at, would you believe, a Conservative Party conference as long ago as 1949. So, Ned Sheeran.
He's a modest little man with much to be modest about.
No, I don't know the answer.
Offer it to the others. John Wells?
I guess it's Churchill about Attlee.
Oh, yes. Of course it was.
Yes, it was. Churchill about Attlee.
He about the same time that he said the same thing, he said a very wicked thing about an empty taxi drew up and Attlee got out.
Yes, lovely. Churchill.
A very famous quotation of Attlee's at the end of a conference where he'd sat there with not saying anything at all for about 3 hours and everyone else been talking where, and he puffed at his pipe and went,
good egg.
He's only recorded words at the whole conference.
Roberta Lee, not sharp words, but sad ones about this character.
Who picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been?
Uncle Ben.
Uncle Ben, too. Well, Ned Sheeran.
Eleanor Rigby.
Yes, Eleanor Rigby in the Beatles song. All right, John Wells. Who was
invited to all the great houses in England once?
Somebody writing about a writing man, isn't it? It was a writing,
yes.
A writing man. It was some sort of person, I should think, about 1930s, wore a waistcoat and had a moustache, my guess.
Poirot.
He had a moustache, he wore a waistcoat, but rather slightly before the 1930s, I think, really, he was better known. Offer it to the others?
Poirot.
It was Frank Harris. Frank Harris, according to Oscar Wilde, has been invited to all the great houses in England once. Before we move on to our final round, which is, again, great confrontations, let me say that not only have we had send in improvements on what our panellists have come up with, but also suggestions for more great confrontations. From Lionel Tier of Bradford, what did Lenin say to Lee Marvin?
I was born under a squandering czar.
Okay. No, I think you did it very well. Perhaps you might sing it next time, Ronnie. From Mr. G.H.L. Buxton of Carmonnock, Glasgow, Haydn, meeting Beethoven in heaven, says,
what? Only 9 symphonies?
And from a listener in Oldham, Colchester, trying to improve on Germaine Greer's account of what was said when Christopher Columbus met Captain Cook.
And how many miles did you get to the galleon?
Thank you, John Payton, who also asks what our signature tune is. And let me tell you, it's Dudley Dell, composed and played by Dudley Moore. And so, finally, we go back to the panel to see what they can come up with by way of imaginary conversations between the unlikely. All I want to know is what was said when these people met. First of all, A.J.P. Taylor, the historian, and Elizabeth Taylor, who is not a historian.
Do you think he said, I'd very much like to look up. I'll read that again. I'd very much like to look up your genealogy.
He may be rather boastfully said, my books are in the Guinness Book of Records. And she said, my husband's in the Record Book of Guinness.
Graham.
I thought that AJP might have said, I think my wife knows your husband. But she replied, which one? He said, my first wife, I think.
So another confrontation between two people with the same name, Sir Francis Drake and Charlie Drake. John.
Charlie Drake came up to Sir Francis, who was standing in his ruff and beard and picaresque period hat and tights, and said, hello, my lovely. And he said nothing at all. So, Charlie Drake said, "Hello, my lovely," and tugged at his bloomers. And St. Francis Drake said, "I'm sorry, I was 1,000 miles away and dreaming all the time of Plymouth Flow."
Moving on to another historical confrontation. Two men with a book, Eamon Andrews and St. Peter. Any ideas?
I thought that St. Peter might have said, "Eamon Andrews, this is your afterlife."
St. Peter didn't by any chance say,
"Eamon, heaven."
Any more offers? All right, one final one. Now, another confrontation by people with the same name. Sir Hugh Green, former Director General of the BBC, and Hughie Green.
Sir Hugh Green is very tall, and he said, "Watch out what you're doing with that clapometer."
Well, thank you very much, Tanner, for your splendid inventions. And finally, I ought to take a look at the score, although we don't pay... Well, we do pay a great deal of attention to it this week because,
in fact,
Ned Sherrin has 18 points and he therefore has a 6-point lead over John Wells. Very well. And we leave you this week with a timely remark by President Truman, although he made it in 1958.
It's a recession when your neighbor loses his job. It's a depression when you lose your own.
Goodbye.
Taking part in Quote Unquote this week were Graham Garden, Roberta Lee, Ned Sherrin and John Wells. The quotations were read by me, Ronald Fletcher. The programme was devised and introduced by Nigel Rees and produced by John Lloyd.